I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. It's been a month since the teacher Mohammed Latif Al-Karahouli climbed these school steps with his English students. He opens the door to classroom number 19 in the Al-Tamim High School. The room is dark. The desks are empty and covered with a thick coating of fine orange sand.
This is my classroom.
What is it like for you to be here when everything is so quiet? What's that like for you?
I feel very sad. I feel very sad if I couldn't find my students. We have devoted our life. I am 60 years of age. I devoted my life for teaching English. And this is my work, my job. At any time they ask me to come, I'll come. I'm ready.
But these days, all you can do is stay at your home.
Yeah, what can I do?
In the dim light of a nearby house without power, where the curtains are drawn to keep out the heat, 15-year-old Noor Ali Al-Nuaimi struggles with a passage from a grade 10 English reader.
Thus was the glory of our forefathers, and thus was the greatness of our country. We should be proud of our history and our homeland, which, in the words of our
beloved
leader, Saddam Hussein. Is the country that give
birth
of the most
distinguished. Yeah, it's a big one.
And
ideal.
And
this one's personalities.
Personalities in the history of the Islamic mission, where it's
basic pillars
and leaders, and who
carried
it to
the farthest
point on the
globe.
The teacher, Mohammed, listens carefully and nods.
She's doing well. She's reading well. But there are some difficult words that she can't pronounce correctly.
But you know what, Mohammed? I think that also the ideas are difficult for them, too. They're trying to give them a lot of politics in this. It's not just a reader.
They are trying to put things in their minds consciously. They are nothing to do with language, teaching language.
So does it
talk? Some of the president's sayings, proverbs, they make it as a proverbs.
And these were part of the English class as well?
Yes, of the curriculum.
So this will have to change?
Sure.
And how does that happen?
We need an expert in English. We can't make a curricula by Iraqi. So we need a foreign. But I think it needs a lot of time. It is not very easy to compose a curricula. It is not easy. It is very difficult. Even in English, it has to study, to make a contrast of studies between Arabic and English.
What would the people think if the new curriculum came from America?
They have to study our society before they make it. They have to study. They should make a contrast of studies, because English and Arabic are different languages.
So are we talking about a curriculum that has to be built from the bottom up?
From the bottom up. And other subjects can be done by Iraqi experts. We have good teachers and professors in Iraq. The collapse regime has built a curricula for 35 years, and you have overturned it upside down. This is not easy.
Connection listeners, we're talking today, as Mohammed said, about an educational curriculum that is upside down. It is laced with the praise for Saddam Hussein and invective for what it calls the imperialist states, including America, NATO, and Zionist powers. And it has been taught now to generations of Iraqi school children. How do you transform an entire school system that is based on indoctrination into one based on education? What will replace it? And how do you persuade anyone that whatever comes next will be true? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And just a quick note that if you check our website at theconnection.org, you'll see pictures of the school, the Al-Tamim Preparatory School, as well as Mohammed and Noor. With me on the program today from our studios in Washington, D.C., we have Phoebe Marr. She is author of The Modern History of Iraq. She's a writer and historian who has studied this country extensively. Phoebe, welcome to The Connection.
Nice to be here.
And I understand you've been spending some time with Iraqi textbooks as well.
That's correct. I have in hand the textbooks for a couple of grades, fifth grade and sixth grade, for what they call Tarbiyah al-Wataniya, which is a civics class. And interestingly, I was fascinated by what Mohammed said, and I feel very encouraged by what he said. I also have them for the Kurdish area, for these very same subjects. And what I find interesting is that the Kurds, in a very impromptu way, faced with an emergency up there, threw out these textbooks for the Kurds and instituted their own. And there is a difference of day and night between what is being taught in Baghdad in these classes and what's being taught in the north. I should say that...
Tell me what you found in...
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, Phoebe. I was just asking, tell me what you found encouraging about what Mohammed had to say.
Well, what I found encouraging was two things. First of all, a willingness to rethink and to go back and redo the curriculum, which will have to be done from the bottom up. And second of all, his comments, which I agree with thoroughly, that Iraq has a number of good teachers, particularly perhaps some older ones like himself trained in the West, who have a sense of what a democratic curriculum should be, who are definitely capable of doing this themselves. Because a curriculum, of course, imposed, so to speak, from the outside by Americans or others, will not sit well with Iraqis. This is an enterprise that the Iraqis have to be engaged in themselves.
Before we talk more about how the problem is fixed, can you pluck from the book in your hand a couple of examples of the type of civics lessons that were being taught to the fifth and sixth graders?
Yes, if I may make a comment about them, the sixth grade book was almost wholly devoted to the military. The fifth grade book was a little bit broader, but eventually came back to the military. It's while it focuses on Iraqi culture and contributions, which is all to the good, it's highly nationalistic, militaristic, sort of emphasizing a paranoid attitude toward foreigners and struggling against foreign enemies. And I hope a little later we can get enough time to talk about the contrast with the books in the North. But let me read you something. Here it says, for example, Our beloved Iraq is the home of ancient civilization. Its land is arable and it has copious supplies of water. For this reason, there has been Persian covetousness, a desire to come and take what we have, for example, from early times toward Iraq and the regions of the Arab Gulf. The modern era has witnessed the covetousness of the imperialist states. At the head of them are the American, NATO, and Zionist forces. Volunteering for the armed forces is an important way to defend the nation and to sacrifice for it. It's possible for those with an elementary school education to volunteer in formations of the armed forces and their various branches, including the Air Force, Air Defense, Navy, and intelligence. And it goes on to say that the forces of internal security are considered among the most important apparatuses in Iraq. They're responsible for protecting the security of the revolution. They fight rumors that harm the interests of the nation. The security forces spend a great deal of effort protecting citizens and making sure the law is upheld. All loyal citizens protect the revolution. For this reason, they cooperate with the internal security forces and help them perform their duties. So the students are urged to cooperate with the internal security. And if you leaf through the textbook, you will see this particular sixth grade textbook, not so much the others. It's full of military pictures, fighting the Persians, fighting the Americans, fighting this one. And the student is given a sense that they're besieged by outside forces, and the main way to shape their sense of national identity is through the military and the defense of the country. Virtually nothing is said about other ways you can contribute to your country, by learning, by creating, by producing, by being a good citizenship. I didn't see anything in the two textbooks that I have in the fifth and sixth grade that would make me want to send my kids to this school to learn to be a productive citizen in any modern country in the world.
But listen to the language that you're reading, Phoebe. I mean, it seems so far. It's the old socialist rhetoric. It sounds like books from the Soviet Union, and it sounds like the sort of language and rhetoric that is well beyond the age of the children who would be looking at the book. I wonder how much of that actually penetrated. You've spent a lot of time in the country. Any sense of that?
Yeah, two things. You're absolutely right about the socialist mentality. And I'd like to say that in addition to the military, they also talk about the gifts of the revolution to the people. The government gives them land, food, this, that, services. It doesn't really talk much about their own initiative and so on. They're taught to have their hand out, which is going to be another cultural difference. Yes, the question is, do kids actually absorb it? Do they believe it? You can't tell. The translation may sound a little more sophisticated than the language itself. I found the language in Arabic fairly simple and fairly clearly understood, and it's explained by the teachers. There's the problem with this is there's no countervailing, no competing set of ideas. Let me just mention that one would assume that in the home, for example, if the parents don't like this ideology and so on, they're going to compensate for it. And probably they do. But in Ba'athist Iraq, children are even taught to spy on their parents. If a kid comes into class and he repeats something he's heard his parents say that perhaps wasn't too complimentary to the regime, the parents are in real trouble. The degree of self-censorship and fear in these circumstances is very difficult for Americans to grasp.
In fact, in a couple of minutes, we'll get a chance to hear a little bit more from Noor about what it was like to be a student in the classroom. When the Kurds had a chance to rewrite it, and we've only got a short bit of time before we take our break, Phoebe, but when the Kurds took a run at this, did they get it right, or were they talking about Kurdistan and, in effect, going too far in the other direction?
Well, I don't want to say get it right. They spent a great deal of time on Kurdish nationalism, Kurdish identity, and their homeland was Kurdistan, although they did remind the kids that they lived in Iraq. So I would say that needs a certain amount of balancing against an Iraqi identity. But what they definitely got right was the citizenship, and I'd really like to compliment them on it. It was night and day compared to Iraq. Nothing about the military, no militarization. They had two pages on human rights, on federalism, on what a democratic society is, and they taught children to cooperate.
I have to step in here, Phoebe, because we have to take a short break. I just want to let Connection listeners know our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about the transformation of an entire school system, one based on indoctrination, turning it to education. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection, live from Baghdad. And if the war had not closed all the schools in Iraq, students at the Al Tamim High School would be listening to their English teacher reading the condensed version of Oliver Twist.
Oliver Twist was born in a workhouse. His mother died at his birth. Nobody knew where he had come from or who her family was. Oliver's father,
Mohammed Latif Al-Karahuli, confesses that he has a deep passion for all the writing of Charles Dickens.
Yeah, Great Expectations. This is a very good novel. I have read it in the college, and Oliver Twist is very useful to our students. It teaches language properly.
Oliver Twist, Great Expectations,
and
Quick Paper.
Yeah. I have
Tale of Two Cities.
Tale of Two Cities.
It was the best of times.
It was the worst of times.
And we have the worst of times now.
It's like here in Iraq. Yeah. It was the best of times.
And we have the worst of times. Charles Dickens always illustrates the bad conditions of people. The bad conditions of people. He illustrates the tyranny and dictators are awesome.
15-year-old Noor knows all about tyranny and dictators. It has been a part of every civics book she has read since she started school.
None of them were true. They were exaggerated, and it was a cruel regime which harmed the people. And in the books, they say that he gave peace. They described him as a great leader, and humanity didn't have a leader like him.
Noor, I want you to tell me about something.
Let's say we're sitting in the class together. I'm a student, you're a student. We're reading here about Saddam Hussein. I have my book open, you have your book open, and we're studying about Saddam Hussein. Do you look at the other student and go like this, like you know it's not true? Or do you have to be very serious about it?
When we read stuff like that, we cannot even breathe. Because when we do, then it will be a sign taken on us by the party. They say that we are laughing on the president or something, and they'll harm us.
One more question, Noor, though. When you get the new book, how do you know that that one is going to be true? If you find out that the one you were reading all your life is lies, how do you know the new one is true?
Of course, maybe the new ruler will not be like Saddam Hussein, will not be a liar like Saddam Hussein, because all of our lives, since we were born until now, we only heard lies from Saddam Hussein. Maybe the new ruler will be different.
Connection listeners, this hour a look at rewriting the curriculum in Iraq. The schools are still closed, but when they reopen, the old message of the Ba'ath Party, the proverbs of Saddam Hussein, will no longer be required reading. How do you change such fundamentals of an education system? And how do you make whatever comes next believable? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. A reminder, you can see images of the Iraqis speaking on the program today on our website. We're at theconnection.org. Phoebe Marr is with me. She's the author of The Modern History of Iraq. And we're joined also on the line now from Graceland University in Iowa, John Menzies. John was U.S. ambassador to Bosnia and Herzegovina in 1995-96, observed reconstruction in Bosnia, and was chief of mission at the U.S. office in Pristina in Kosovo, 2000 to 2001. John, welcome to The Connection.
Thank you. Hello, Dick. It's good to be with you.
You had a chance to listen to Phoebe talk about a little bit of what's happening in northern Iraq and a little bit of what's happening in the center, and I'm thinking to myself that this all must sound very familiar to you, with the Croats and the Serbs and the Muslims all competing for their own particular interest in the reconstruction of the former Yugoslavia.
It's very familiar, and it underscores a difference in perspective, too. As I heard the teacher speak about the worst of times, I was reminded emphatically of one of the characteristics that separates success from failure in this kind of endeavor. We're a people that must be proclaiming new beginnings and new starts, not just bewailing what's gone and looking at the past with simple regret. And it seems to me that the purpose of education in the new Iraq is to empower people. It's not just for the knowledge, but the knowledge that results in action.
So the State Department and its Future of Iraq project, they are at the beginning stages now of making their contribution to a new curriculum in Iraq. Is there a danger that too much American involvement and not taking advantage of the high level of education that still exists among a more older, mature class in Iraq means that what's produced won't be acceptable?
Well, I doubt that will be the case. I think the experience is so strong and direct that will be able to take good advantage of all of the goodwill among the teachers and the vast experience they have locally. One of the things that's astonishing in all of societies in transition is the common level of dedication among the teachers and the willingness to teach what is good for the students and good for the society. And I think we can build on that.
What are the potholes here, though, Ambassador? You've seen failures and bumps along the road in Bosnia. What do the Iraqis need to watch out for?
Well, the levels of preparation vary very widely. And we'll have to work with them to develop a new generation of teachers. We also have to combat in many societies a culture of corruption within the educational system itself, which is utterly inimical to success in education, where students are able to buy grades or buy admission to competitive programs. We have to work with them at every level to take full advantage of the experience they have while combating what may be the weaknesses of the existing system. And I do believe that we have the skill to do that.
May I jump
Phoebe?
In? This is
yeah, go ahead.
Phoebe, to say that this kind of corruption is really recent in Iraq under Saddam, actually under sanctions more than even Saddam, where you paid to get your grade. They have an older tradition, which is really quite good in terms of preparation and even in terms of textbooks. Some things they may, you know, might go back to in a previous period where education was better.
But Phoebe, what we're watching on the news today is the great gathering and religious-based and spiritual-based gathering in Karbala. But what we're hearing in Baghdad is a lot of competing visions about what Iraq will be and how it will reconcile its education system with the different religions here. Do you see that being a problem?
This is going to be extremely difficult. You're quite right. There are many different strands, and the lid has been taken off a simmering pot. One will hope that after a period of exuberance, things will settle down. But this is not to minimize the difficulties of creating a new Iraq, which has some sense of Iraqi identity, yet respect for the differing traditions as well.
And Ambassador Menzies, what are the school children in Bosnia-Herzegovina using now? Are there different texts for different religions, different languages?
I think they're finally, after 7 years, coming to a more common curriculum between the different groups that were involved. But one point I want to underscore is something that I think Phoebe was highlighting. When I was in Bosnia, I remember talking to one of the political leaders there as we approached the end of the war, and he was assessing the importance of education for the society. He said, if I had to choose between agriculture and education, I would spend on education and go hungry. He overstated the case. But what he was emphasizing was education as the basis for a secular state, not a religious one. In other words, we don't want to replace these schools with madrasas or other approaches, but to educate people for the rule of law and for democracy. That means giving them a broad-based education. In one sense, at the higher levels, even moving into the liberal arts is an approach.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Take our first call now from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Saeed's on the line. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. As we contemplate what the effects of years of indoctrination in the educational system in Iraq is, I wanted to share what the effects of educational indoctrination has been in Iran over the last 30 years. Perhaps a great example of how children have been brought up with total indoctrination, sometimes in contradiction to fact. And now 20 and 30-year-olds in Iran completely born and raised and educated and indoctrinated under the Ayatollahs reject them in great percentages and want nothing to do with the theocratic state. So that, to me, that brings up the question of whether in the day and age of modern communications, internet, et cetera, how much indoctrination actually does work. given the fact that at some fundamental level, indoctrination requires the hiding of truth.
Phoebe, let me hear you on this, because I was struck to hear Noor, the 15-year-old girl, speak as articulately as she did about knowing that what was being taught to her in class was wrong. Simply not being able to acknowledge it at school because she was forced to be a member of the Ba'ath Party and being afraid of the people there. That's a fact. But she was saying to me that she knew it wasn't true.
Yes, I have a question in my mind, too. I don't believe just because you put a textbook in front of a student, they're going to believe this. And this stuff was so overwhelming that I also question how much of it is believed. But I do want to raise the point that there isn't, for the younger generation who hasn't been outside, there is little competing information, facts, and so on, unless they're getting it from their family. And I suspect she may have been a member of a rather sophisticated group in Baghdad. When you get down to the south or villages without this kind of competing influence, more of it may sink in. But it's a question. I agree.
All right, Saeed, thanks very much for that call. Next now to Iowa City. Greg's joining us. Hello, Greg.
Hello there.
Go ahead.
Yes, Dick.
I hear you, Greg. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I'm just calling because I've worked on about 8 projects in post-communist Europe with curriculum development through the State Department for citizenship education. My most recent one's going to begin with Kyrgyzstan fairly soon. And I was curious to ask Phoebe particularly, she talked about the more progressive democratic citizenship type of curriculum in the Kurdish area. I was wondering, given the absence of a constitution so far in Iraq, and probably won't be for some time, on what basis was the Kurdish curriculum developed? And was it basically the skills and attitudes part of a standard curriculum, and what was the knowledge that was in that curriculum?
Well, first of all, I don't know how it was developed. I was in an office and given the textbook and went home and read it. But here is my assumption. What the textbook that I had was handwritten, which shows you how ad hoc it was. And my feeling was that a group of educated Kurds, people who had a good Western grounding, perhaps in sociology or anthropology, had constructed it. They put a great deal of emphasis, as I said, on Kurdishness and Kurdistan. They put a lot of emphasis on federalism. But what struck me was that it wasn't just propaganda. They put forth several different ideas which students were supposed to compare and contrast. They talked about the student in a family with rights and obligations, and they then made a parallel between that and the nation, the government. There was something nice about the whole thing because the student came out with a sense of rights and obligations. They also had some material on separation of powers, executive, legislative, and so on. And it wasn't just propaganda. They set forth several different ideas that the students could compare and contrast, which is totally missing in the Baghdad books.
John Menzies, I want to take from what Greg said, his reference to the Constitution, and ask you about the quality of the administration, the importance, that's a bad way of putting it, the importance of the rule of law, the sort of degree of comfort or security that people have in a post-war society. How crucial is that to a sort of dedicated development of a new educational curriculum?
It's vital. It's vital for the establishment of democracy. It's vital for a stable society. People have got to believe that the law protects all equally, and that it is not used simply to sanction people. And what I've heard described in the educational system as it existed is basically sort of a Stalinist approach toward education, the cult of personality, the cult of state through the personality. The rule of law, however, asserts human rights, individual rights and liberties and protections. And that's the basis upon which democracy will succeed in the region.
Greg, are you still on the line from Iowa City?
Yes, I am.
I'm curious to know from your own experience working in the days after the Iron Curtain was pulled aside, what you think is the sort of number one priority for the people who are going to tackle this new curriculum, the sort of level of who's involved and where that expertise comes from?
Well, that's a really important aspect to all of these types of projects and curricular development projects in particular, and that is, well, you go back to the old saying, the best way to learn something is to teach it. And if your teachers are going to be the catalyst behind this slow change and evolution toward a democratic state, they have to experience it themselves. And many of the projects that I worked on and that the State Department has developed a model for, actually, is to do projects that deal with teachers coming to the United States from any of these countries, post-communist or Iraq in this case, experiencing things in our school system that are applicable to the context, the socio-political context of the home country. And that's the crucial part. You have to have people who can say, this is wonderful, but it doesn't work in Iraq. This is wonderful, and it does work. Can you show us more? And then from there, you work with them to develop in the home language a curriculum that can be started at one grade level, for instance, as opposed to trying to do all of this all at once. And then from that grade level, teachers become the new teachers of democracy in that country through workshops, professional development institutes, and so on and so forth. It takes a while, but I think that what Ambassador Menzies mentioned about having a sort of disposition, and that's an essential thing you can do even without a constitution. And so did Phoebe Marsh. She mentioned the idea of skills development and comparing and contrasting simply different political systems. These are things that can be instituted fairly quickly, and students begin to then develop a democratic habit of mind in the sense of being able to think through things.
Greg, thanks so much for your call and your insights.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, and I'll take this opportunity to thank Ambassador John Menzies for being with us on the program today. Ambassador, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
John Menzies was U.S. Ambassador to Bosnia and Herzegovina from 95 to 96, Chief of Mission for the U.S. Office in Pristina in Kosovo, 2000 to 2001. We're talking about Iraq this hour, Connection listeners, and we're talking about redeveloping, redesigning the education system for this country. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Don't forget to check out our images on our web. We're at theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection, live from Baghdad. This hour, a look at the education system in Iraq. The social studies textbooks are laced with anti-Western and anti-Zionist propaganda, as well as fulsome praise for President Saddam Hussein. These are the books that have been in use for generations. Connection listeners, how can the hatred that is taught in schools be changed, and who should participate in that? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Quick reminder to check our website, theconnection.org, for photos of the Iraqi guests on today's program. And with us this hour, we have Phoebe Marr. She is author of The Modern History of Iraq. Second edition is out. I guess, Phoebe, that you're going to have to go back and write another edition pretty quickly.
It's not out till July, and I'm writing one last chapter.
Page by day, one day, one
That's
page,
right.
I can imagine. Let's go back to our phone lines, 1-800-423-8255. Joining us from Boston now, Afaf is on the line. Hi, Afaf.
Yes, hi. Thank you. Thank you for giving me a chance. I just want to make a comment and commend Phoebe on all her wonderful work, and I agree with her viewpoints wholeheartedly about the pre-Saddam educational era, you know, because I was educated there. And I left Iraq after Saddam regime came into being, and I was I earned my B.S. in economics from Baghdad University, and I was admitted immediately after that into the School of Economics in London. So I believe that Iraqis are quite capable and quite equipped. Obviously, many of the educated ones have left Iraq due to the regime, you know, suppression. They can go back to Iraq and they can build the education system in addition to the cadre which we already have in Iraq now. So I believe that they don't need too much imposition from America or any other places to guide them as to the curriculum. They did have remarkable curriculum. They did have remarkable educational system. And I believe the high school graduate, they used to be almost equivalent to 1 year or 2 years college here, truthfully, the curriculum. When I came here, I was quite surprised because I found out my information, my knowledge, my education, even with bachelor degree, definitely was almost equivalent to a master's degree in economics, for sure, you know, because I earned my master's from UMass and Amherst, and then I earned a second master's from Harvard University, and I do feel that the Iraqi educational system pre-Saddam era, extremely advanced, progressive, inclusive. It was really remarkable.
It's a really interesting point that you're making, Afaf, because I spent an hour or so with a group of law professors outside the Mustansiriya University School of Law, which has been looted and burned, all the computers stolen. And I was asking them about their curriculum. I said, gee, you know, the justice system, is it going to have to be updated, changed, your lectures? And after they explained that almost everything that they possessed as academics had been destroyed, they said no, that in fact their study of civil law, their study of common law was international. And the point that you're making about economics and the sciences, I mean, these are obviously places where Iraqis over the years have excelled. Phoebe Marr, we need to focus, I guess, specifically on social sciences, on civics, and places within the curriculum from the lowest grades on up through the top of high school where the type of propaganda that we're talking about can be inserted. I guess we should be specific about that.
Well, I quite agree with that. Certainly the sciences, perhaps math, maybe even language, although we don't know exactly what they're teaching in language. I wanted to reinforce what Afaf said. You're talking about several generations. This really began, I would say, in the mid-70s. So I don't know how much time we're talking about here. There are the older the generation in Iraq, the more contact they will have had with the West and other standards. There is definitely something to go back to here and work with. Now, certainly what I would do if I were going to do it is simply not teach this Tarbiyah Wataniya class right now, wait until it opens in the fall. It's not essential that they have this one little class immediately. And start with a committee of Iraqis themselves, of course, including some of the ones who are outside and working with the State Department to gradually bring in a new curriculum. Let me say, too, that I want to emphasize what's been said about teaching the teachers. The single most important factor here, as elsewhere in the Middle East, I might say, is the principle of inquiry. To get students to learn to inquire and investigate for themselves, not so much the content. We're not trying to impose anybody else's culture. We're trying to get them to examine their own culture with a spirit of inquiry. That needs to be reinserted into the teaching practices and into the curriculum as well.
The whole idea of critical thinking.
Yes, that's correct. Critical thinking and inquiry is going to have to be brought in because that's, of course, what is not in the curriculum. I would also like to say that it's not quite clear to me exactly how much we have to change because the Ba'ath Party itself put a big emphasis on education. You had to be a member of the party to be in the teachers' training school, and at the upper levels, certainly they Ba'athized people. And I don't want to dismiss too much this idea of having a certain mindset or attitude, at least among top levels or some of the younger generation that came through the education system in this period, because as in the Soviet Union and other state-oriented systems, you had to be, you had to toe the mark in order to get where you were. So perhaps it's sort of the top levels that have to be, if not removed, at least retread. But there is definitely something in Iraq prior to the 1970s that we can work with. The system was very good.
I don't know. I don't know, Phoebe, if I want to cut them as much slack as you're cutting them. I'm holding in my hands the new English Course for Iraq textbook, Book 8, for senior-level high school students, 17th edition, published in 1998, okay? So we're talking about something that is relatively recent. And in the Reading Comprehension Unit 14 under the Marshes of Southern Iraq, I'll quote you, "Today, it's no longer subjected to exploitation and the rule of feudal lords. The feudal lords were dispossessed. Water stretches have been controlled, and the land has been reclaimed and distributed among the villagers who produce, among other things, large quantities of rice every year," yada, yada, yada. I mean, that's just so far off base.
Well, it's a 1998 really textbook, right? I mean, that's right.
It was a 1998 reprinting, but it may be very old text. You know how they would do this.
No, I don't know. No, I've got a 1994-98 text. These are I don't know how far back you have to go. The Ba'ath came into power in 1968, and incidentally, the previous period was no period of glory. But these things were changed. These things were changed roughly since 1968. There are some things you can go back to. You have to go back and see what's there. Maybe it's better to start over totally, but that's going to take a lot of time. Certainly in the 90s. I'm looking at a 90s textbook also, and they're horrendous. You can hardly believe them.
Yeah, well, if I look at the photograph of Saddam Hussein in the cover of this book, it does date back to the late 1960s, so it's not clear how much has been updated. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to go back to the phones now, and Scott's joining us from Jericho, Vermont. Hi, Scott. Thanks for calling.
How you doing? Good, good.
I'm fine. What's on your mind?
My question is real simple. Given the fact that in a lot of Muslim countries, women are treated very poorly, are we going to give women the right to vote in Iraq?
The women have the right to vote, so we're not going to give it to them. I mean, in fact, it's a double-edged sword. But in Iraq, which has been under a secular government, even if a tyranny, women have had not only the right to vote, but the right to an education, the right to work. So in this cultural sense, at least, the women in Iraq are fairly advanced.
Do they have the same rights and opportunities as men do in general, rights to own property and inheritance and things of that nature?
The inheritance goes along with family law. So if they're Sunni, they have one set of inheritance rights. If they're Shia, they have another. But frankly, the situation is similar, for example, to the United States, where at professional levels and so on, they can compete, but there's kind of a glass ceiling at the top levels. But generally speaking, compared to other countries in the region, women have got rights, and they have practiced them.
It's kind of an urban-rural split, though, isn't it, Phoebe? I mean, when I talk to the well-educated women working in the medical school, here in Baghdad, they say, you know, that their opportunities, they could be director of the school, they could do whatever they want, but the further you get away from the urban centers, the fewer opportunities the women have, but and the men as well, I suppose.
I think that's very similar to the United States as well. It depends on how well educated and what your opportunities are. That's very true. Let me make one comment here that I think is important. In the last decade, perhaps more, there's been a lot more religious influence in Iraq, very similar to other countries. This is true of both the Shia and the Sunni. And we want to keep our eye out because some of the younger generation have come under the influence of Islamic movements. And I think you may be seeing not so much with the ex-Ba'ath, but with the new wave of a younger, more Islamic influenced generation, more conservatism.
Though in recent years, I think it's probably fair to say that Saddam Hussein did his best to try and exploit his own standing within Islam. I mean, building the Saddam Mosque, the mother of all battles mosque. This was some people say, a very clever mixing of his socialist policy, his own stature as he claimed, descendant of the Prophet, and in effect using the weight and the strength of Islam to provide support for himself.
That's absolutely true. He's great at co-opting movements he sees. But when you go out to the university, one of the things that's most striking to me to see is to see how many young women are muhajaba. And it's not the old-fashioned kind of hijab that people wore in a village when I was there in the 1950s. It's the new modern version. Frankly, when I was there, even in the 60s, you would not see that. So
Phoebe, I want to come back to the subject of education, if I can, for a minute.
Right.
And that is the issue of the hatred that comes in that sense of the persecution complex of Saddam Hussein, that people had to arm themselves against, as he called them, the Zionists and the Americans. I mean, this is something that actually may have stuck. And I've heard that on the street, that it's us against the world notion.
Yes. In fact, that's one of the reasons I wanted to put these texts into the public domain, because some of these attitudes persist, particularly after sanctions. The distrust of the foreign, and incidentally, this predates the Ba'ath. There's a very strong sense of the desire for independence, keeping foreign control out, and he's played on that. And one of the things you're going to find, I think, is that this is going to make it much more difficult to cooperate with the Americans in moving toward reforms that the Iraqis themselves say they want. But I think they're of two minds. They're torn. They want liberation. They certainly want freedom. They want many of the things the Americans have. But there's this strong strand of suspicion of a desire for independence, which Saddam has exaggerated and inculcated in his curriculum. That's going to make it more difficult. In a sense, it's a dysfunctional set of ideas in people's minds.
So a quick last question then, Phoebe. Can that be changed or turned around with a revised education system?
Well, we're going to have trouble if we come in and try ourselves to change it. I want to emphasize that. It's got to be Iraqis themselves who spearhead this effort with our help. But the way I think in which you're going to change these ideas gradually and slowly is to provide education which is going to be useful for them in achieving a new life, a better job, more prosperity. In short, the new Iraq that we want to create has got to be attractive. And that will act as a pull against these ideas which are anti-foreign, and also, I think, against perhaps a gathering momentum of Islamic conservatism.
Phoebe, it's been great having you on the program today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Phoebe Meyer, historian and author of The Modern History of Iraq. Thanks to Mark Allard here in Baghdad, to Connection engineers and producers for all their help in bringing this program to you. A special thanks to the Iraqis who take the time out of their hectic and busy day to share their stories with us here on The Connection. My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection live from Baghdad.